Hello there, and welcome to the Palm and Pine Podcast. The boys are coming to you from their hidden camp, set deep in the Florida woods on the banks of the mystic Suwannee River. So let's take a moment and hear from the boys of old Florida.
So welcome to the Palm and Pine Podcast. I'm Doug Barlow here with Steve Barlow. And Steve, we have a wonderful guest with us today. I swear I could not sleep last night thinking about the guest we have here today. We have none other than Hrvatsi Morić from Geopolitics and Empire Podcast. And you guys, if you have not watched this podcast and you want to know what's going on internationally in politics, social issues and economics, you have to watch this podcast. He comes out with an interesting guest about every 3 days now. And these guests you're not going to see on mainstream TV or on mainstream radio. So NPR says they consider all things. That's not true. It's a Geopolitics and Empire that really has all things considered. So it's a great podcast. So Hrvatsi is a native of the Chicago area. He earned his bachelor's degree in history from Northeastern Illinois University. Then he took a master's in international relations from the Geneva School of Diplomacy. He's worked in academia as a professor. He's been a radio announcer. He's worked for the Peace Corps. But lately, he's been concentrating on this wonderful podcast, Geopolitics and Empire. So welcome to the Palm and Pine Podcast, Hrvatsi Morić.
Great to be here.
Great. Let's just start out with the obvious question. Tell us a little bit about your background of growing up in Chicago and your college years and what kind of led you toward wanting to be a geopolitical analyst.
Chicago, where the new Pope is from. Yeah. Nothing spectacular, just usual upbringing. My parents came from Yugoslavia, Croatia, in their, around 1980. They met, actually. They met separately in Chicago in the Croatian community. And so I was the result of that. And then, yeah, just growing up in Chicago, nice middle-class lifestyle. And we tried to move back to Croatia twice, and that failed. And I ended up back in the U.S. and studying. I decided to study history and education. I forget the last part of your question.
How that morphed into you being a geopolitical analyst. When did you know that was what you wanted to do? Did it go back to your college years?
Well, I think it was a trajectory. I think first was, one of the first ingredients would be, I would say, the Bible, because of Bible and history and prophecy. And then you add to that, having studied an interest in history, and then having lived sort of between different cultures, and, we had a war in the 90s in Croatia. I was actually, as a 10-year-old, technically, I was living in Croatia during the tail end of the war in 1994. But we were far from, further from the front lines. But and then what happened after my undergrad, I did Peace Corps Mongolia. So during my undergrad was when I was starting to learn about deep politics, so to speak, parapolitics, as you were saying earlier, like the real history, and slowly beginning to wake up, reading a whole bunch of different books, and then deciding to leave the empire. So I was coming, right before, as I joined Peace Corps, 2005-06, I went to Mongolia. I realized that America was an empire. And, we're born in the U.S., and we think we're just citizens of the U.S., a country, a nation. And then you realize it's like, whoa, no, this is an empire. We're citizens of an empire, which has got 1,000 bases around the world and is regime-changing countries and killing millions, Iraq war. One of my professors in Geneva was Saddam Hussein's defense lawyer. I'm no fan of Saddam Hussein, okay? Let's get that straight. But he had nothing to do with 9/11, and the Iraq war was a fraud, which, you ended up killing millions of people. But anyway, so that was sort of my trajectory. And then, you add on some of the conspiracy stuff, Alex Jones and InfoWars. Lately, Alex Jones has sort of taken a turn, which I very much do not like. But, getting into the Ron Paul Liberty Movement, Edward Griffin, Creature from Jekyll Island, learning all of this different stuff. And just the key is just voraciously reading.
Right. It's been an awakening process for us as well since 2020. But let's kind of go back to your podcast for a minute, and we'll get back into the conspiracy stuff. Now, I would call your podcast kind of an interview-based podcast. And as I have watched like hundreds of them, I kind of in my mind rank them according to the to your guests, how interesting they were. And I guess everybody has their own opinion. So to me, for me, like Bob Marriott is like one of the top. He's just such an entertaining guy. But another guy that really caught my attention, having working in academia myself, is Ned Ryan. And when he came on to talk about his book, The American Leviathan, and you've worked in academia. And I know when I work in academia, I'm very frustrated with the administration because you have a faculty meeting, they come in and they tell you about this scheme that they want to push. And it's a one-way thing that they push down and it has nothing to do with what you're facing in the trenches with your students. And I've often wondered, where do they get this very dysfunctional style of leadership? And when I heard his interview, you know, I found out where they get it from. And, you know, he connected it back to a scholar in the 19th century that you just have this top down kind of one way way of doing things. I've never had the administration ever come in and say, how can we help you do your job better? They just do not care. And I know you've been in academia. You must not have liked it that much or you would still be there. Did you face that kind of issue with the administration when you were in academia?
In different ways, yeah. I mean, I could, if I wanted to, I could go back to where I was, but I'd rather work on my baby, geopolitics and empire. But I mean, I can give you a few examples. When I was in Geneva, I had all sorts of professors, instructors at the school there. We had professors that were former CIA, Rockefeller Institute, what do you call it, consultants, Australian intelligence, globalists. But we also had a few dissidents who really understood, professors who understood how things worked. And one of my early experiences there was this French geopolitics instructor called Aymeric Choprade. He was one of the top French geopolitics instructors. And my professor was friends with him. He organized a summer course. We had coffee with him. He published a factual book which could have been, he never actually said it himself, but it could have been interpreted as criticizing the official narrative of 9/11. Just for that, he got blacklisted, completely blacklisted from ever again teaching in France and Switzerland. You know, he had kids. That was his career. You know, RT did a segment on him. Eventually, he went to left academia and worked for Marine Le Pen. And then you had the Daniela Ganser, the Swiss historian I've interviewed twice. He was run out of academia. And the cool thing is, I mean, we aspire to this, to have more success outside of academia. But people like Daniela Ganser, he's a case study. He's had a wild success being driven out. He founded his own institute. All of his talks sell out in Germany. But getting to my point, where my experience was, where do some of these things come in? Like I worked at Kazakh. I worked here in Mexico at the top high school and university called the Tec de Monterrey. They got 30 campuses. All of the millionaire Mexicans send their kids there. You know, half of the kids come from wealthy background. The other half have scholarships and stuff. But where I work is the only school in all of Latin America that attends Davos and World Economic Forum. And we've had Al Gore come to the campus during the COVID online graduation ceremonies. I wasn't there, but they told me that Bill Gates and Hillary Clinton spoke. And then, you know, basically when you, as you were saying with Ned Ryan, these institutions are tied to the elite and the elite ideology, which filters down. So, you know, you can bet that the head of the tech went to a meet, maybe he went to Davos or something, and then he comes back and that gets diffused on down. And then, you know, we at the high school, I had to give a course called, we had to give a course called Model United Nations. So all of the kids were obliged to participate in a UN simulation, which is the indoctrination. Right. And same thing in Kazakhstan. So the president Nazarbayev created these elite high schools and I worked in one of them. All of the kids in the Kazakhstan had to participate in the Model United Nations. You had the UN SDGs on the wall, which are being infused into every subject matter. And so you can see the top down infusion of this stuff. And then you get to the woke things. I heard as of late when I was teaching, we didn't have trans Mexican high school students. And now I have colleagues who tell me they have trans Mexican high school students. And admit, you know, teachers have to take these courses. What do you call it? Like every semester, we all have to take these training courses. And he told me that they're pushing like feminism and attacking masculinity and things like this. And I told him, like, if I were still working there and they told me to take this course, I'd be like, no. Like fire me, you know. I'm like, I'm not with. What does this have to do with education and history and these sorts of things? So yeah.
Right. Well, it sounds kind of similar. But let's go back, if we could, to 2020, the Great Awakening. And I think I speak for Steve also. I had never heard of G. Edward Griffin until the COVID thing. I had never heard of David Icke or any of these ideas, and certainly not geopolitics and empire. So it was a great awakening for people like Steve and myself. And you had some issues back at that time. You were banned from Patreon, YouTube, I think. You were kicked off of PayPal. And I don't fully know the details of that. I know you weren't pumping out pornography. I know you weren't pumping out filth and gore and violence like Hollywood does with impunity, and their First Amendment rights are protected. I know you weren't doing that. But could you, like, for our listeners, kind of give us the detailed story of what happened? What opinion did you put out that really ticked off the elite and got you kicked off so many platforms?
I think I I'm kind of proud in a sense, because it's just me. Like, no one else has been. I'm like, when they say your team, like, it's literally I do everything. So I'm like this one man revolution, the skeleton crew, one man show, and little old me. Where it's you know, when you reach a certain threshold, that's when they take notice of you, right? And so that means I must have had sufficient enough of people listening to the podcast and having a hitting that threshold of impact that the deep state took an interest in me, which I'm proud, because I did it single-handedly. But basically, it's all the topics that is you're sort of alluding to earlier that counter the narrative. But the key ones in the past half decade have been the biosecurity state, COVID, and seems to be the anti-war narrative. Those seem to be the key ones. Obviously, maybe sometimes with the cultural, like the trans woke stuff to a lesser extent, as well as the climate. I think in the future, they'll clamp down harder on the climate skepticism, climate denialism. But basically, for me, what had happened, the first big slap I got was, I think, January. If you look at the history of my YouTube, like, the times have changed. You earlier on, like maybe 10 years ago, you would get more views on YouTube more easily. Like, if you look at some of my earlier videos, they got tens of thousands of views, and not anymore. And so it started with when I interviewed Dr. Francis Boyle, the late Dr. Francis Boyle. I'd known of his work. I was assigning his work to my students in foreign policy classes, because he was an expert in foreign policy, Middle East history, international law, Israel, Gaza, and bioweapons. And as COVID broke out, I'd been the first to ask him, like, hey, what's your opinion on what's happening? You know, we were all hit by this. What is this? And it was January 2020, like at the very beginning. And so I got him on the podcast. I was the first to get him on, did a 40-minute interview. And he said Corona was a offensive biological warfare weapon. And he said COVID could be. I asked him the question, because he talked about anthrax in 2001. That was a false flag, the 2001 anthrax thing. And he said that was to be used as a false flag to bring in the police state, which the Patriot Act, right? And I asked him, like, could they do the same thing with COVID? And it was, I mean, looking back, like, again, I'm proud, like, that's exactly what the purpose of COVID was, to bring in this police state. And so that blew up. That went, pun intended, that went viral, that interview. 300,000 views on Pentagon Tube, as I like to call it. They deleted it. And then Great Game India, there's a big geopolitics website in India and others, they reposted it. So I believe it was seen by millions of people. The next day, my face was on the front page of InfoWars, and Alex Jones was doing a play-by-play of my interview with Boyle. I kind of got miffed that later on, you know, sometimes they steal your thunder, the alt media. Alex Jones was like, we were the first to interview Francis Boyle. And I remember, I think Boyle actually corrected Jones, like, no, it was geopolitics and empire. And the first chapter of his last book, Medical Tyranny, is the transcript of our interview. And so that happened. And then I think it's important for me, the important part of the story is I had opened up Patreon at the time to start generating some funds. And then so that was January 2020. July 2020, I get an email from an Associated Press, prestitute, as Gerald Celente would call them. He sends me an email. He says, hey,
I saw your interview with Boyle. You know, I want to do a story on you. Who are you? What are you doing? And I completely ignored it. I completely ignored it because I knew I don't talk to mainstream media. And later, months passed, but I went back to search what was his piece published after he contacted me. In August, I found his next op-ed, and it was a hit piece on conspiracy theorists. And it didn't mention me because I didn't give an interview. But if I did, he would have painted me as some wacky conspiracy theorist. But that same author then, a year later from my Boyle interview, he wrote another piece co-written with the Atlantic Council, NATO's think tank. And that piece attacked Boyle, COVID conspiracy super spreaders, it was called. And it mentioned geopolitics and empire because he appeared. They were tracing the trajectory of that viral interview. Boyle went on geopolitics and empire, which was then spread by Great Game India. That is a coincidence. In that same week, around that same time, I was deplatformed from Patreon. So you have like, you got mainstream media, military intelligence, NATO, you know. And then the following year, April of 2022, when the Department of Homeland Security, again, is this a coincidence? In April of 2022, they roll out the Disinformation Governance Board. That same week, Mint Press News, Consortium News, Caleb Maupin, who's a commentator, and myself get banned from PayPal for life. And then, you know, Matt Taibbi and Kim Iverson contacted me, and they covered our deplatforming. And to this day, I can never use PayPal again, which is losing me money because I'm trying to go look at podcast hosts to do dynamic ad insertion. I can get thousands of dollars more. They all pay out in PayPal. And some of them say they can only pay out in the name of the person, like of my name, not my wife's name or something. And so, yeah, it's total. Those were the big ones. And then later they switched the method of censorship to today, where you've heard of Linda Yaccarino of X say freedom of speech, not reach. So it's like you can be on the platform, so you feel like you're not being censored, but you're just shouting into the wilderness, you know.
That concludes our part one of our interview with Havarji Morick. Make sure to tune in next week to catch part two. And until then, keep it Florida. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode of the Palm and Pine podcast. This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered professional advice. The views and opinions expressed by the host or any guest are our own and do not necessarily reflect the views of any affiliates. Our opinions are just that, opinions, and are not legal or medical advice. But in our opinion, avoid lawyers and big pharma at all cost. Copyright 2025, Palm and Pine Podcast, all rights reserved. Please subscribe and share. Okay, until next time, keep it Florida, and we'll see you soon.